We have Meyer versus Chesapeake Operating, number 18-6152. Councilor Reed. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Spencer Cox, and I represent Matt and Cheryl Meyer and Kai Bach, plaintiffs in the action below. The very brief factual orientation to this case is that plaintiffs brought claims for nuisance, negligence, and ultra-hazardous activities, alleging that defendants' operation of saltwater injection wells caused a dramatic and unprecedented rise in earthquakes in Oklahoma, taking them virtually from one a year to about three felt earthquakes a day in 2015. The district court dismissed the case, holding that in the absence of actual property or personal damage due to earthquake, plaintiffs could not recover the damages they sought, which were insurance premiums they paid in response to the new seismic environment.
You say they were required to pay, but nobody required them to pay that. Isn't that correct?
Well, that's correct, Your Honor, in the sense that there was no one with a gun to their head.
There was no administrative agency or anybody that said you had to do it. It was just your client's choice to do that.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Right.
Now, well, I had a question about that. So do they get a rider for earthquake insurance? Is that what is involved here?
Generally, yes, Your Honor. It comes as a rider or an addendum for an additional separate fee to your existing policy.
Decided they needed to get that type of coverage, and they're seeking reimbursement for the cost of that rider. Is that essentially what's going on here?
That's correct, Your Honor. I can't tell you that in every member of the putative class that it would be through a rider and not through a separate policy.
Okay.
But it's certainly through some, either a separate policy or an addendum.
But it was not just a policy for property damage. It was a policy for earthquake-caused property damage.
That's correct. Specific earthquake insurance.
Okay. And it's okay.
Gotcha. So the decision below was wrong for several reasons. First, the court analyzed it in terms of just general tort law, whether Oklahoma tort law would allow recovery of these premiums. What the court didn't do was look at the individual claims, and it should have. Nuisance, for instance, under Oklahoma law, does not require a physical injury or physical invasion to property. You can have a nuisance claim without any actual physical damage. For that reason alone, the nuisance claim should not have been dismissed. Secondly, whether or not insurance premiums are an accurate or sustainable method of measuring nuisance damages, at a bare minimum, Oklahoma law allows for nominal damages for nuisance. That's another reason it's a nuisance claim.
You didn't ask for nominal damages until after the until very late in this case, isn't that right?
It's correct, Your Honor.
First time on appeal, as a matter of fact, right?
We did not expressly plead nominal damages.
You didn't plead or ask for nominal damages until you were on appeal.
That's correct.
Okay.
Leaving those aside, Oklahoma law does not require the measure of damages to be exact. There are a number of nuisance cases, Lyons versus McKay for one. And others, George v. Greer comes to mind, where the court held, and this is generally applicable in most jurisdictions, you know, the failure to be able to quantify an exact amount of damages does not lead to complete dismissal of the claim. Here, we suggest that the insurance premiums are a reasonable measure of the nuisance damages, and so that, as well with the lack of the physical injury requirement and the ability to get nominal damages under Title 23, the Oklahoma statute, Section 98.
In nuisance, you have to have damage. It just doesn't have to be physical damage, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Here in the nuisance context, the injury would be the loss of use and enjoyment of your property because three times a day you have a magnitude 3 or higher earthquake shaking everything around you.
But the only injury, the only damages you've been seeking is the increase in the insurance policies, the earthquake insurance policies premiums.
That's the measure we put forth in our pleadings and in the briefing below.
Now, how would this work? You buy the insurance, you get reimbursed for the earthquake rider. Let's use that language, even though it might not be precisely correct. Then there's an earthquake, and you suffer damage to your house. What happens then?
Well, then you wouldn't be a member of our class, for a starter, and you wouldn't be in this case.
No, no, you're getting damages now. You win this case.
Okay.
So they have to pay for earthquake insurance that you're getting. And then there's an earthquake. You're covered by your policy. You get fully reimbursed for your injury. The insurance company then goes against the defendants. They're subrogated to your claims. So how does that work? The defendants have paid for the insurance all that time.
Right. Well, I see a couple places to interject there. First, we have asked for insurance premiums paid, so past premiums paid. And I don't know, this isn't a situation where we might win the case, collect some damages, and then at a later point in time have an earthquake with damage. Secondly, I'm not sure, Your Honor, that the law is clear that there would be subrogation if the defendants were the ones paying the insurance premium. So I suppose I can analogize to the collateral source rule here. Usually, if an insurance payment is coming in, that doesn't count as an offset because the plaintiff has paid that. The defendant didn't do anything to procure that insurance. In this context, if the defendant was paying the insurance premium under the situation you've put forth, then that insurance payment would be available as an offset. And I don't think it's at all clear that there will be a subrogation claim from the insurer who has only done exactly what they contracted to do, which is to reimburse for risk.
So that fits with how I was looking at this. Essentially, you're requiring them to get insurance to cover, since there wouldn't be a subrogation claim against them. They essentially own the policy, and they're covered for damage to your property. That's essentially what you're asking them to do. Is that right?
I'm not sure that's correct, Your Honor, because...
What would happen if there was an earthquake and you didn't have the insurance? Why is that? The way things normally work, you wait till you're injured by somebody else's negligence. You sue them for the damages. You collect the damages. Why is that not appropriate here?
Well, I think that begins to raise some policy considerations. But for one thing, that encourages folks not to take proactive steps to mitigate their damages. That also...
That encourages who to do what?
I think that encourages individuals who own property not to be proactive in mitigating the risk that's placed upon them.
You're talking about the homeowners or the defendants?
The homeowners.
Well, how are they doing anything to prevent the damage by requiring insurance, by obtaining insurance? That has nothing to do with whether the damage will occur, does it?
No, Your Honor, sure. That the house potentially is still destroyed, let's say. But if you've proactively obtained insurance, now you have a relatively straightforward administrative problem that you need to solve, which is to collect on your insurance payment. I think that's highly preferable to asking individuals, encouraging them to take a let's wait and see and sue later approach. If anything, this is really an externality, right? A cost that's being externalized. And what in the policy sense is the best way for that cost to be accounted for? Requiring plaintiffs to collect for insurance premiums now puts those costs on the defendants, who are the ones that create them, rather than...
So what you're doing, essentially, is you have a suit that requires them to carry insurance for damage to your property from earthquakes.
The suit asks for them to reimburse for insurance premiums paid.
In essence, the essence of what's happening here is now you'll be covered by an insurance policy. You're essentially asking them to buy insurance against causing earthquake damage.
That's close, but where I see the difference, Your Honor, is in the way you characterize as asking them to buy insurance, which indicates insure me in the future. What we're asking for is for defendants to reimburse us for insurance paid in the past.
What is any difference in principle?
Because there's been no damage in the past.
So after your first year, say you bought the insurance policy for a year, then you require them to reimburse you for that year. If you buy insurance the next year, you're going to sue them again to make them pay for that insurance payment. I don't see how you're distinguishing reimbursing for your prior purchases of insurance from requiring them to pay for insurance in the future? Are you saying if they had paid for 1 year of insurance coverage, then they're home free?
No, Your Honor. I think what I'm saying is that the injuries that are that have been incurred are the premiums that have been paid. To analogize to the lower court decision, that's the injury in fact here.
Okay, but so your clients get reimbursed for a couple years of the rider on their policy, and they're not going to sue after paying two more years for the riders?
Well, they
is going to go on indefinitely, is it not?
In theory, it could, Your Honor, but I don't see how that's particularly different than, say, an antitrust case where you sue for super competitive overcharges that have happened in the past. Surely defendants could continue with their same conduct, and if they keep charging you super competitive prices, the plaintiffs could continue to sue them for that. That doesn't seem to be a hang-up in those kinds of cases, and I think because the law really...
They wouldn't have to... You're not proposing they take out a new lawsuit every year. You're proposing some kind of an equitable order that these oil companies pay for insurance indefinitely as long as they're using injection wells to dispose of their waste, right?
No, not indefinitely, Your Honor. Just insurance premiums incurred in the past. If that award happens, I think the natural result is that the defendants whose activities produce these costs then change their behavior so as not to produce them anymore.
But would the earthquakes continue to be liable likely years later, even though the injections stop?
Well, that's certainly a merits question for the experts, Your Honor. I can't answer if all injection wells...
But the injection companies are now paying premiums for something that is, I guess, is uncertain whether they're, if they stop their conduct, whether that old conduct is going to continue to create a problem or not.
The facts that we have alleged are that the injection wells cause the earthquakes. If the injection wells...
Forever?
No.
You inject in 2018 and in 2042, an earthquake, it could be caused by the 2018 injection?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that's the case.
Well,
can't you see the wisdom of a tort rule that says you get a recovery after the accident so we can find some causation connection?
Yes, Your Honor, but this is the proximate cause question that all
You're getting reimbursed because they didn't comply with the duty they owed to you. And the duty they owed to you was to pay for your insurance.
The duty they owed to us was not to cause earthquakes.
Well, but they haven't caused an earthquake, so they haven't breached that duty.
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. Our allegations are that they have, in fact, caused all of the earthquakes in Oklahoma.
Well, then collect for all the damage they've done for the earthquakes already. That's fine. There's no problem with that. That's a traditional lawsuit.
I think you misstated the duty you're claiming. You're not claiming the duty not to cause an earthquake. You're really claiming the duty is not to cause a risk of earthquake.
No, Your Honor. We think the duty is not to create... I'll restate maybe in a more nuanced way. The duty is not to create an environment in which it is reasonable and foreseeable that individuals will go out and obtain insurance, earthquake-specific insurance, because you have created a seismic environment where thousands of earthquakes that didn't happen before your conduct began are now occurring only because of your conduct. I see that I have 1 minute left, so I think it's best that, unless there are further questions, I reserve that for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Brian Schmalzbeck, and I'll be speaking today on behalf of all the defendants. My colleague Craig Buchan is available if the Court has any questions about the Mid-States bankruptcy issue, which has been waived on appeal, but otherwise I will use this time to address the issues common to all defendants. And a quick response up front, my colleague has suggested that the District Court should have focused on a nuisance duty in particular, but I think the court has identified the problem with that, that there's still no nuisance duty implicated here. The only injury that's been alleged is a financial injury, not a present an interference with the present enjoyment of the property caused by, for example, shaking earthquakes. That's a different lawsuit. That's not the lawsuit that's been pled and brought here today. So this case is purportedly about the danger to property posed by earthquakes. But the plaintiffs allege no earthquake damage to their property. Instead, they merely fear that at some point in the future, their property might be damaged by earthquakes. So as you said, they want the defendants to pay for their insurance now, based on this academic theory in a law review article, because they were, quote, exposed to a risk of future harm that has not yet come to pass.
Well, their argument's a little more refined than that, because they're saying they're exposed to a much greater risk of future harm, that because of the fracking activities or the injection activities, that the risk, you could go bare prior to this, but now the risk is so high you can't.
Yes, sir. I think we're in agreement that they've alleged there's been a change in the risk. Although plaintiffs did state at one point in their brief that they're alleging we're responsible for this entire risk pool, in their words. But the complaint actually says something different. The complaint says that before this conduct allegedly started creating a risk of earthquakes, there was already ambient seismicity in Oklahoma. They say about 1 to 2 earthquakes per year of a certain size. And they also say that before the relevant time period, there was substantial earthquake insurance coverage in Oklahoma. They say about $5 million up to and before 2009. And they say in 2015, which, as they allege, is the height of earthquake activity in Oklahoma, there was a total of about $19 million. So, yes, they are alleging a difference. I don't know that it's as big a difference as has been suggested. But the key point is that if that risk of harm does come to pass someday, and the plaintiffs do actually experience earthquake damage, they will have the ordinary tort system in Oklahoma available for redress.
Let me ask, are there any regulations, any or statutory requirements that companies involved in drilling, or maybe particularly fracking, must carry a certain level of liability insurance?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. I can't give you the answer to that question.
Because it seems to me that essentially what they're asking is that there be that requirement. They're asking a court to impose a requirement that you insure their homes, businesses, whatever, against the danger caused by the increased risk of fracking.
Right.
So I was curious if that's already being taken care of in some way by the government.
I'm not aware of a specific requirement, but in general, like most large companies, they do carry liability insurance.
They're not self-insured?
I can't speak for all the defendants, but I know in general most companies this size do. But I'd like to address.
That's what they're saying, though. I don't think they would be satisfied with the oil company taking out a liability insurance policy for damages they in the future may cause and be responsible for under normal tort law. I don't think they're asking for that. I think what they're saying is we, the potential victims, are going to take out the policies, not you, the oil company. We're going to take them out in the amounts we think are appropriate, with the right amount of deductibles, with the right premiums, with the right insurance company, no matter whether they're a high profit or a low profit or a not-for-profit insurance company. And then we are going to send you the bill for our annual premiums, and everybody in the class should get reimbursed for those, maybe requiring us to take out policies and maybe not. But if we don't, of course, we're assumed that we have. Isn't that what they're really asking?
I think that's right, Your Honor. They want policies in the plaintiff's names, but paid right.
They're not asked, and they didn't ask for any injunctive relief. They didn't ask for an injunction requiring the insurance company, the oil company, to keep a policy.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay. What I was asking, I realized that their complaint is framed the way Judge Ebell said. I don't see any difference in principle. What they're doing is they want some insurance guarantee that if there's damage to their home, they'll be covered. They can do that by buying their own insurance policies and requiring the companies to pay for it, or they could do it by requiring the companies to carry insurance that protects against liability for these things. I don't see a difference in principle between the two. Maybe I'm missing something. Do you see a difference in principle?
I don't, Your Honor. I think either way, the duty that they want to impose through this lawsuit is the duty to pay for insurance one way or the other.
Because of their increased risk that their fracking causes.
That's right. And if I could address why that's unnecessary. So right now...
But that claim wouldn't be framed as a damage claim, would it? It would be an injunctive claim. We want to affirmatively enjoin the drillers to maintain insurance. And they're not asking for any equitable relief.
That's right.
So they're asking for damages, and they want money in their hands, damages, for which presumably the attorneys would get a percentage of attorney's fees, in order to let all landowners in Oklahoma then take money and buy insurance.
That's right, Your Honor. I think Judge Hart's point, as I understood it, was that
would be
the economic
a more
effect.
Rational approach
well, no.
to the problem.
Well, the remedy is one thing. I'm trying to figure out what the duty is here. And the duty in the situation I talked about is identical to the duty when you're asking for past expenditures or you're seeking injunctive relief. It's still got to be based on a duty. What is the duty? The duty is you have to make sure we have insurance coverage. You have to pay for it. So I don't see a difference between what I was talking about and what Judge Ebell is talking about in terms of duty. That has a lot to do with remedy. I'm trying to figure out what the duty is here, and it sounds like the sort of duty that normally we leave to the state to require drivers to carry so much liability insurance or companies involved in certain hazardous activities to cover certain amounts of liability insurance. I'm not sure I've ever heard of a court requiring, saying there's a duty for this. That's the thing I'm concerned
about. I think that's right, Your Honor. And if I could tie this to Oklahoma law, I think the most analogous claim that we've seen in Oklahoma is a claim for the lost chance to avoid injury, these lost chance cases. So in the Hardy case we discuss on page 20 of our brief, the Oklahoma Supreme Court held that in all non-medical malpractice cases, which is to say nearly all Oklahoma tort cases, it's insufficient just to show a lost chance of avoiding harm. And Hardy said that the lost chance doctrine is what it called a remarkable exception to this ordinary rule that a plaintiff has to prove you were the but-for cause of a present injury.
But your opponent says the best case are the nuisance cases. For example, Midwest City versus Eckroat, where despite the fact that there was no evidence of physical injury, a claim for nuisance went forward, and that this case, your activity is a nuisance to property owners in Oklahoma, and part of the damages that they are suffering as a result of your activities is that they have to incur increased costs of earthquake insurance.
Right. I took my colleague to say that they have chosen to buy earthquake insurance, and that's the basis of the nuisance. But the Eckroat case is different. It doesn't have to do with the lost chance of avoiding a future injury. It doesn't have to do with any sort of future injury, because in that case, there was actually green slime that leached from a sewage treatment plant onto some water on the plaintiff's property.
Well, it wasn't on the plaintiff's property. It was nearby.
The plant was nearby.
I thought the water was off property.
I took the water to be directly adjacent to the property, like on the boundary. But in any event, I don't think it takes much imagination to think that having a sewage plant next door would create the sort of problem that would interfere with your use and enjoyment of property.
Well, what about three earthquakes a day from activity adjacent to your property? Would that be a nuisance? Could that be a nuisance?
I think that could be a nuisance, Your Honor, but that's not the case that's been alleged here. They're not saying that these earthquakes are... I don't know, making us uneasy about being in our houses. They're saying that we have this purely financial injury, which is just not the kind of thing that nuisance doctrine is meant to address. It's meant to address interference with the use and enjoyment of property. But if I could turn to Hardy, Hardy says that we have this lost chance doctrine in the medical malpractice context because of something quite unique to medical malpractice, which is this unique duty that physicians have to diagnose and treat pre-existing risks. And that means that if they fail to diagnose and treat those pre-existing risks and even marginally increase those risks, then they can be liable. But Hardy said, we're going to draw a firm line there. And what the court said, which applies here, is we refuse to effect a total restructuring of tort law by expanding the lost chance doctrine beyond medical malpractice. And so that's what the plaintiffs are alleging here. They say, we have lost a chance of avoiding future earthquake damage. And insurance premiums that we have paid, those are our damages for that lost chance.
Well, why explain? I mean, you attempted to explain, but I don't quite follow it. Why medical malpractice is sui generis, so different than other kinds of torts?
The way the Oklahoma Supreme Court defined the doctrine, it's because there is a special relationship, is the term that's used, between physician and patient. And when a physician engages in a relationship with a patient, it's not just a duty to cause no harm, it's a duty to prevent harms from getting worse. And so if a physician fails to diagnose cancer, for example, and if properly diagnosed cancer on day one would have a 50% chance of survival, but the physician negligently diagnosed it 1 year later when there was only a 25% chance of survival, that is a breach of a physician's unique duty to prevent risks, medical risks, from being exacerbated. And so plaintiffs haven't identified any case from any state that actually applies this theory that you have a duty to prevent insurance premiums from going up or a duty to prevent plaintiffs from having to buy insurance in the first place based on a lost chance of avoiding future harm. The only authority they cite for that is this law review article, which is fittingly titled Tort Recovery for Loss of a Chance. But that article describes itself as an attempt to expand the lost chance doctrine beyond medical malpractice to tort law more generally. And that's exactly what the Oklahoma Supreme Court rejected in Hardy. So having rejected it in Hardy, we know that the Oklahoma Supreme Court would reject plaintiffs' novel lost chance claim here.
Did Hardy specifically say affirmatively, we are not going to expand the lost chance doctrine outside the medical malpractice area?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it has addressed the issue before us today, in your opinion?
In my opinion, absolutely, Your Honor.
And why shouldn't, instead of guessing what Oklahoma would do, why shouldn't we certify this?
Well, two reasons, Your Honor. One, the Tenth Circuit has said over and over and over, we don't have to certify a question every time there's any doubt about what the right answer is. Any doubt isn't the standard. As long as there's a principled course to resolve the case, given what we know about state law, given what we know from cases like Hardy, then certification is unnecessary. But more specific to this case, this court has said just 2 weeks ago, in fact, in the Burns case on April 23rd, that we generally will not certify questions to a state court when a party seeks certification only after having received an adverse decision from the district court. And so here we're in sort of a heads I win, tails you lose game, where the plaintiffs didn't ask for certification below. They went all in on the merits and lost, and now that they're up on appeal, now they're asking for certification.
Well, there are also lots of, I'm sorry to hear about that. Was that a published opinion?
I believe it was, Your Honor.
I'm 2019. I'm sorry to hear about that because there are state high courts that don't like to hear the case until it's been resolved below. They like to take it at the appellate level when they have a much cleaner record and cleaner. I thought we devoided that language. I'm sorry to hear that. What was the case again?
It's American National Property and Casualty Company v. Burns, and it's 2019 Westlaw 1805510.
1805510?
Yeah.
1805510?
That's right, Your Honor.
Oh, 1805510.
1805510.
But that's consistent with other published cases from this circuit, too, right?
Yes, sir.
Bad law.
I see my time is up. If the court will indulge me for 30 seconds, I can wrap up very quickly.
Your time has expired.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
There's a couple of cleanup items. First, you asked if we had specifically alleged interference with the use and enjoyment of our property. We have in the petition at paragraphs 92 and 97.
And do you allege facts to support that interference with use and enjoyment?
I think those facts would be the number of felt earthquakes per day across Oklahoma, the difference in the before and after in felt earthquakes
How
in Oklahoma.
How does getting reimbursed for your insurance proceeds remedy the impact on the use and enjoyment of your property?
It's a measure of damages for that loss, use, and enjoyment. Of course, you can never go back and get the use and enjoyment again, but it's one way to measure the damages.
Well,
that's why we offer
it. I mean, we typically measure the damage for your lost use and enjoyment, not your insurance premium.
Right. It's a lost use and enjoyment is difficult to quantify, and that's our proposed solution.
Okay.
Thank
you. There's nothing else, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Case submitted. Counselor excused. Court will be in recess. We'll have another panel here at 4 o'clock.